born to a wealthy family, and the two men had travelled Europe together. But Tolstoy could not cope with Turgenev's love of Western Europe and the lack of moral spine he discerned in him. Yet it had been the rejected Turgenev who, on his deathbed, pleaded with Tolstoy to get back to his former ways. "My friend, return to literature," he said. Some people think Tolstoy was healthier and more liberated in his imagination than he is in his preaching. I was interested to ask about his writing, and of course, the famous Shakespeare controversy. I wanted to ask you about your early writings, some would say your greatest writings, War and Peace and Anna Karenina.
I have forgotten almost my whole past, all my writings, and everything that has led me to the level of consciousness by which I now live.
So, what, has literature lost its way, or is it just you that's changed?
It is thought that the more the desires, and the more refined these desires, the better. And nothing shows this more clearly than the descriptive poetry, and especially the novels of the last two centuries.
Is it a question of sort of how the heroes and heroines who represent the ideals of virtue are portrayed?
Indeed. In most cases, the men who are meant to represent something noble and lofty, from Child Harold down to the latest heroes of Feuillet, Trollope or Maupassant, are simply depraved sluggards, consuming in luxury the labour of thousands, and themselves doing nothing useful for anybody. And then the heroines are the mistresses, who in one way or another afford more or less delight to these men, and who prove quite as idle as they, and equally ready to consume the labour of others by their luxury.
And is this so for all characters in literature?
I do not refer to the representations of really abstemious and industrious people one occasionally meets with in literature. I am speaking of the usual type that serves as an ideal to the masses, of the character that the majority of men and women are trying to resemble. I remember the difficulty, the inexplicable to me at the time, that I experienced when I wrote novels, a difficulty with which I contended and with which I know all novelists now contend who have even the dimmest conception of what constitutes real moral beauty.
And what was that difficulty?
The difficulty of portraying a type taken from the upper classes both as ideally good and kind and yet also true to life. To be true to life, any description of a man or a woman of the upper educated classes must show them in their usual surroundings, that is, in luxury, physical idleness, and demanding much. Now, from a moral point of view, such a person is undoubtedly objectionable, but it is necessary to represent this person in such a way that he may at least appear attractive. And novelists try so to do this, and I also tried.
But it was hard.
The attempt to make an immoral fornicator and murderer, with a duelist or soldier, that is, someone utterly useless, idly drifting, and a fashionable buffoon, the attempt to make them appear attractive requires much art and effort. However, the readers of novels are, for the most part, exactly such men, and therefore readily believe that these Child Harolds, Onegin, Monsieur de Camors, are very excellent people.
And how do you respond to criticism?
Today I received two letters, one containing an article by Merezhovsky criticising me, and the other from a foreigner, a German, also criticising me.
And your reaction?
I felt bad, and I wondered why it is that people feel the need to vilify and criticise others for their higher aspirations.
I have to say, such attitudes are not unknown in you.
Then I realised that although one cannot condone criticism, it is unavoidable, necessary, and beneficial. Without such criticism, a person would get carried away with himself and become vain. His need to please public opinion would gradually divert him from working on his soul.
You talk about yourself now.
Undeserved hatred and contempt liberates us from caring about public opinion and puts our attention on the only steadfast foundation of life, following one's conscience, God's will.
Okay, so... So now on to Shakespeare, sir, towards whom you seem to show a great deal of hatred and contempt, if I may say so. Everyone else loves him, but you beg to differ.
My disagreement with the established opinion about Shakespeare is not the result of an accidental frame of mind, nor of a light-minded attitude toward the matter. On the contrary, it is the outcome of many years' repeated and insistent endeavours to harmonise my own views of Shakespeare with those established amongst all civilised men of the Christian world.
But you haven't managed that.
I remember the astonishment I felt.